Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Gwyneth Doland. On August 5th, crews working for the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency were working on cleaning up an old mine near Silverton, Colorado, when their digging accidentally released about 3 million gallons of pressurized water that had been building up below the surface. And that water was full of yucky stuff, heavy metals. It was colored a mustard yellow. It rushed down through a creek called Cement Creek into the Animas River, which flows south through Durango and then into Farmington and onto the Navajo Reservation. The effects of this spill were immediately obvious and devastating to folks. Now, almost 2 weeks later, we have seen tests showing that the water is good, but we're wondering about the long-term effects, what's going to be done, and who's going to pay for it. So today we have with us, to help us sort this out, Clifford Villa is a professor of environmental law at UNM Law School. He spent 20 years working at the Environmental Protection Agency, so we are very lucky to have him. He's very familiar with this. Thanks for coming in, Professor.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you for having me, Gwyneth.
And we also have KUNM's own Marisa DeMarco, who's been reporting on this issue all week. I think you heard a piece of hers earlier last hour. Welcome, Marisa.
Thanks, Gwen. Good morning.
Thanks for getting out of bed for us, because we know this is early for you. And on the phone this morning, we have Andy Cora, who is the owner of Four Corners River Sports in Durango, Colorado. His store sells rafts, kayaks, stuff like that, and a sister company leads rafting and kayaking trips on the Animas River. Thanks for calling in, Andy.
You bet. Good morning.
I should also say we were expecting to hear from New Mexico Environment Secretary Ryan Flynn, but his office told us last night that he wasn't going to be able to make it after all. Professor, I want to start with you. We are talking today about an abandoned mine that the government was trying to clean up. It's pretty complicated, but in your opinion, who is ultimately responsible for this mess and who should pay for it? Where should that money come from?
Thank you. Well, I think it's important to recognize that the Gold King mine, which was the source of the immediate release earlier this month, is one of more than 300 abandoned mines in this very same mining district. So there is already a substantial amount of mine contamination and years and years of investigation of the extent and effects of that mining contamination in the Cement Creek Animas River watershed.
So, some of these mines are hundreds or 100 years old. You know, can we chase down these people who pulled gold and silver out of the mines and get some of that silver back?
Sometimes, yes, if we're lucky and diligent with a lot of hard work. There are a number of mines long abandoned across the West that have corporate successors that are available today. There's been some pretty substantial litigation against mining companies for operations that happened at the turn of the century even. So there is always the possibility, and I think there's a distinct possibility, that there may be some private parties who are also responsible and able to contribute to the cleanup of this area.
Some of those owners, though, are as slippery as a contaminated trout.
Well, that may be true, but there's also some very good lawyers who might be able to pursue them and catch them with the right bait.
Well, I hope they're listening and scribbling that down. Marisa, you have been doing some reporting. We just heard a story. Tell us, what is going on right now with the Navajo Nation? We know the water's back on in Durango. It's back on in Farmington. But farmers out there on the Navajo Nation still don't have water. Why?
Yeah, so the Navajo Nation shut off the irrigation system that comes from the San Juan River, which meets up with the Animas River. And it's been 15 days now, and they still haven't turned it back on. I spoke to some folks last night who are thinking it might come on this weekend. But the farm official that I spoke with earlier this week said, you know, if we don't get water out here within a few days, you know, we're going to see fields die off. And they're starting to see some of their crops wither. And it brings, economic losses. Also, I think what's important to note is that on the Navajo Nation, the farms are often a food source. So it's not just a matter of losing some money. It's like you don't have your food for the winter. You might not have the food that you deliver around the Navajo Nation to other folks.
But Marisa, the water was turned on to farms days and days ago near Farmington. So why is it not back on the Navajo Nation?
They are feeling distrustful of the U.S. EPA testing results, which actually didn't even come in for the Navajo Nation until 10 days after the spill, so just a few days ago. And they're looking for their own EPA to deliver testing results, or the New Mexico Environment Department to deliver some testing results. And I think one of the things that the Farm Board Representative Joe Ben Jr. really mentioned to me was that, you know, it's not like we can just sell off this land in the future. Like, we really have to make sure that we don't contaminate our land in the long term. And so they're being extra cautious about making sure that they don't add contaminants to their own farms. And I think the other thing that he mentioned is that, you know, the San Juan River in that area moves a little more slowly than it does, than the Animas River does, for example.
Thank you for that. Andy, you've been up there in Durango for decades now, and you have seen the effects of mine waste coming down in your direction from the Silverton area. What do you think needs to change if we're going to clean up this mess for good? And, you know, who's going to do that?
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of the changes we see in the river are kind of unseen. I mean, we don't really know. You know, most people aren't aware that there's always some level of mine waste that's been leaking from that Silverton mining district. I think people are certainly more aware of that now. But I've been aware over the years of you know, when I first moved here 3 decades ago, that a big section of the river upstream of town really didn't harbor any fish or significant insect life. There were some cleanup efforts that were made 15, 20 years ago with some retention ponds, and the river got better. I mean, it healed quite quickly, and there was good fish. You know, you'd see fish upstream of Durango, you know, quite far up the valley. And then I think, you know, those operations were shut down, and we've seen in the last 5 or 6 years kind of the river not supporting fish further and further or closer and closer to Durango. So it's a long-term ongoing problem, and really, you know, the fix is tough. You know, you can go back and try and blame this company, that company, you know, but I don't know that the blame game is really what we need right now. What we need are some real changes. So if there's anybody responsible, you know, I would have to say it's, you know, past and present, you know, congressional representatives. You know, there's I believe, and the professor can correct me on this if I'm wrong, but I believe it's the 1872 mining law that really hasn't changed, you know, since its inception. And with changes in that law, I think we can see some changes in mining practices. And as far as this current cleanup, you know, the way I see it, there's only one entity that has the money to put into it, and it's the federal government.
Ah, Andy, speaking of money, you lost some money because of this spill. People canceled their trips. They weren't coming in to buy stuff. Can you put a figure or a ballpark guess on the amount of money this thing cost just you?
Well, you know, it's from our sister rafting company. You know, there was $12,000-$15,000 of refunds that took place, you know, in the immediate aftermath of the spill. So those were just pre-booked trips. And then, of course, there's a lot of walk-in traffic that comes beyond that. So, you know, it's in the range immediately in these last couple of weeks of, you know, $20,000-plus, which for a small company, you know, that's pretty devastating. And, you know, beyond that, all the employees are laid off as well, so they're not getting their paychecks.
Right.
And that has a ripple. You know, there's a lot of companies in Durango, so that has a ripple effect through the whole economy.
Callers, we want to hear from you, too. We've got great guests today, but we want to hear your experience. Have you been impacted by this spill? Did you lose business, money, crops? Were you unable to access your water? What was your experience? We want to hear about it. So call us at 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866 or toll free 877-899-5866. You can also reach us at callinshow@kunm.org. Post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM News. Now, Cliff, we heard Andy talk about the 1872 mining law. I am not familiar with that, but I assume you are. How is that related here?
Well, in the 1800s, there was a law there are many laws that encouraged the settlement of the West, the Homesteader Act. You could buy property for absolutely dirt cheap. And the General Mining Law was another of those laws that encouraged people to go forth and conquer the West. At one point, you could purchase an acre of land for $5. And in fact, that law really hasn't been amended. So it's still possible for people to go onto public lands, federal lands, your lands, and stake a claim, dig a hole, and essentially establish a private right to those minerals, and not a lot of regulations on that. There are, however, another set of laws, including the Federal Clean Water Act, that would make it illegal to pollute into the water, but it still means that you can go and start digging on public lands and claim it as your own.
So if I went and decided I'm giving up journalism, I'm going to go be a silver miner, and I went out and started digging a mine and then, as we might expect, didn't have very much luck because I'm not a good miner. And then I was like, I'm giving up and I'm out of here. And then 10 years later, whoops, the hole I dug is now spouting toxic chemicals. Can they come back and chase me, or is this just now the EPA's problem again?
Well, they could come back and chase you. Under the federal Superfund law, there is a concept of retroactive liability. It doesn't matter when you did it. You could have done it in 1870 or you could have done it next month. You would still be liable for it. However, there's a very significant question of whether or not they could pursue the cost of cleanup from you. If you don't happen to have several million dollars in your bank account, you could be liable, but that doesn't mean that the government's going to get that money from you to provide for the cleanup.
So do you think the law needs to be changed? Do we need to change the legal regulatory environment to strengthen this somehow?
One thing that would really happen is that before you or anyone else begins to create a big mine and a big mess, you need to put up some performance bonds to make sure that you have the financial ability to clean up, to reclaim that land when you're done. And sometimes there are regulations for some kind of performance bonds, but they may not always be enforced adequately, and the level of the bond may not be enough to provide for the cleanup that we now know can easily run into several millions of dollars very quickly.
We had a question from the email from Jantina, who says the mining company should be the one who pays, not the taxpayers who fund the EPA. And she asks why it should be us. So I think you're explaining that the law, that it's kind of hard to track these people down sometimes.
Right. Well, let me just say I agree with the comment. Absolutely. And federal law is premised on the concept of the polluter should pay. And that's why there are liability provisions that go to whoever might have owned or operated the mine at the time that the release happened. However, there's a real question of whether or not they will have an ability to pay when you find them or when the big thing like the Gold King event happened years later.
Let's go to the phones and talk to Bill in Las Lunas. Bill, welcome to the show. What can we talk about with you today?
Yes, ma'am. Good morning. Ms. DeMarcos, on her story, uses the words EPA triggered the spill, when in fact it was the contractors hired by the EPA for the cleanup that triggered the spill.
Thank you very much for that, Bill. Let's talk about that point for a moment. Cliff, does it matter if it's the EPA or someone the EPA is paying to do this?
I think it does matter in a couple of ways. One, if it was the contractors that caused the spill, they have insurance. They must have insurance as a matter of federal contracting. And so I imagine there's going to be some, when people ask, where's the money coming from? One obvious source should be the contractors and their insurance. However, on the other hand, you hear that the EPA has accepted responsibility for this spill. And certainly the EPA and the federal government is going to be the largest supply of funding available, at least immediately, while other issues of liability insurance are resolved.
I might add, this is Andy. I think here in Durango, we're probably lucky that the EPA had its hand on the shovel at the time. I think some type of disaster was inevitable. There was high pressure water behind just an earthen bulkhead. You know, they didn't realize how much water was behind it and how much pressure was under. But we're probably lucky the EPA had its hand on the shovel, because they have taken responsibility now, and there are funds from the EPA.
Andy, do you plan to seek remuneration, to ask for some money back from the government for the money that you and your sister company lost?
Well, there is a system set up. There's some online forms, and I my manager has gone and looked through some of those and put some of that in. We're fairly diversified in our retail store and online retail. Personally, we've lost money in our kayak school. We'll pursue that. And some of the smaller rafting companies who rely entirely on taking tourists down the river, and our sister company as well, will certainly seek those funds.
I imagine there's a lot of people, we've seen fly fishing guides, all sorts of folks. I've seen them on Facebook complaining about this and how much it's interrupted their business. We're going to talk a little bit more about money and business after this break. Andy, thank you so much for calling in and being with us. We really appreciate being able to talk to you, and we wish you the best of luck.
All right. Thank you.
So, folks, we're going to take a quick break. We've been talking about what happens when old mines leak new junk into our water and what happens after that. Who cleans it up? Who pays for it? In a few minutes, we will talk to Farmington Mayor Tommy Roberts, who's going to give us an update on the water that's coming through his town and what they're doing about it. In the meantime, call in with your questions and comments, 277-5866 here in Albuquerque, toll free, 877-899-5866. You can email callinshow@kunm.org, post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM News, and we'll be right back.
Edible Arrangements at 4770 Montgomery Boulevard Northeast in Albuquerque offers fresh fruit bouquets and chocolate-dipped fruit for any occasion. EdibleArrangements.com or 505-888-0100. Edible Arrangements is a valued supporter of KUNM.
Youth Media Project presents Audio Revolution, Mixtape Number 5. Stories created by youth at Global Leadership Forum 2014, an annual program held at the United World College near Las Vegas, New Mexico. We invite you to listen to how these young people from every corner of the globe came into their own power, discovered their potential, and claimed their uniqueness in this world. Tune in this Friday at 8 a.m. on KUNM 89.9 FM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. We're talking about the Gold King mine waste spill and its impact on downstream communities like Durango in Colorado and Farmington here. Right now in the studio with me, we've got Clifford Villa, a UNM law professor who spent 20 years working for the Environmental Protection Agency, and KUNM reporter Marisa DeMarco, who's done several stories this week about the impacts of that spill on the Navajo Nation and other folks. Professor, I want to come back to you for a minute and talk about the word Superfund, because we've been hearing a lot about this lately, and some folks are saying this should have been a Superfund site a long time ago, and some folks are saying this doesn't need to be a Superfund site because that makes it sound like it's Three Mile Island or something, and who wants to go kayaking there? Who wants to buy a house near a Superfund site? What does it mean to be designated a Superfund site?
Well, I appreciate the question, Gwyneth, because I think that's a very important one, and there's a lot of confusion about it. Superfund begins with a federal law, the Superfund statute, and among other things, it provides funding for all kinds of cleanups, both emergency response, which is what you see happening right now, and long-term cleanup of very substantial sites. So there are funds available for emergency response, and that's what's happening now. But in order to access greater funds, generally over a cap of $2 million, a site needs to be placed on the Superfund list, known as a National Priorities List. And when a site is designated on the National Priorities List, then EPA has access to a much greater level of funding. So, for example, there's a lot of different mining districts in the state of Colorado and many others that are designated Superfund sites. And with that, EPA can access funding into the hundreds of millions of dollars. And that is probably what it's going to take to address this area that, as we know now, has more than 300 abandoned mines. It's not just the Gold King.
And that money comes from a trust fund that the Superfund has. That's what it means, right? But where does the money come from that goes into that fund?
Originally, the Superfund Trust Fund was established by a tax on oil and chemical industries. That was back in the 1980s. Since about 1995, the money in the Superfund Trust Fund has come from you and me, federal taxpayers, and it's an annual appropriation from Congress. So Congress puts money into the Superfund Trust Fund, EPA spends that money on cleanup, and then attempts to recover that money through cost recovery actions when they find liable parties.
See, I had it in the back of my mind that that money comes from industry, but it's just another form of our money.
It is essentially a taxpayer-funded program. However, EPA works very hard to recover costs, and so they often succeed in putting hundreds of millions of dollars back into that trust fund to fund future cleanups.
So the EPA has lawyers like, I don't know, you?
I was one of those EPA lawyers for 22 years that worked specifically on Superfund. And my colleagues and I worked on mining sites in Idaho, for example, where we recovered over $500 million from mining companies working on Superfund sites that cost hundreds of millions of dollars to clean up.
So it sounds pretty unfair to us that we have to pay for this, but we should know that there are folks like you who are out there working for the government trying to get some of that back to us.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the EPA works on behalf of taxpayers to recover those monies and put them back into the Superfund Trust Fund.
Let's take a call from Cal in Los Alamos, who has a question about old laws. Cal, what do you want to know today?
Hi, good morning, and thanks for taking my call. And sorry if I sound awful. I've got a head cold. I question is directed to the law professor, and given that these mines are often more than 100 years old, what, if any, laws existed at the time that could have regulated them? And if there weren't laws that regulated mine release or mine design, it seems fruitless to go after people for violations that didn't exist. So it seems we have to go forward and redesign where we get Superfund money from so that maybe all extractive industries have to pay into a fund. So as you just said, the taxpayers aren't on the hook. But maybe could there be a little explanation of how exactly you would go after these ancient mines, which were dug 100 years ago?
Thanks for that call, Cal. So, Cliff, if you were still working at the EPA, which I should clarify for people who are just tuning in, you don't work there anymore. You're now a professor at the UNM Law School. But when you were a lawyer for the EPA, how would you try to track down these people responsible for some of these accidents when they were doing their extraction a long time ago?
Well, reconstructing the historical record is very important here, and very often mining companies kept records of how much ore they dug out of the ground, how much ore they processed from a mill, and how much millions of tons of mill tailings they dumped into a river. And when you have a volumetric estimate like that that is purported by a company, that can be evidence of how much mining waste they released into a system. And if that company still exists today or in some corporate successor form, that company may still be liable, even if it was legal at the time in the 1890s, if it was legal to dump all your mining waste into the creek. One of the principles of the Superfund law, it is retroactive. You can be responsible for that cleanup today, even if your conduct happened 100 years ago.
So we've been talking about this, you know, responsibility that the government has and how it is involved in this. But there are a lot of complicated feelings about whether or not we trust the government to do this, whether or not we want the government to have to do this. And Marisa, you have been talking to some folks who just don't trust the government when they say this water is safe. You know, why do you think they have not turned the water back on in the Navajo Nation? Do you really think that they're don't trust those numbers?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's kind of coming up for me in the conversation as we're having it is that there's just a very different experience on the Navajo Nation versus immediately even off the Navajo Nation in terms of what resources are available or how people were impacted. I think on the Navajo Nation, we're talking about a much more dire situation where people's food sources are withering in the fields under the sun. They really, really would like the irrigation to be turned back on. All the farmers that I talk to are really desperate for to be able to flood irrigate their fields.
Now, let me say this. There are farmers upstream who turned it on 5 days ago, you know, nearly a week ago. So are there farmers that you talked to who felt the Navajo Nation leadership made the wrong call or should have turned on those faucets when their neighbors did?
You know, when I talked to the farm board representative, he said there has been division among the farmers. There are definitely folks who want that water turned back on and who aren't sure why it isn't turned back on and who are really calling for it to be turned back on. But for the most part, I think most of the farmers support the Navajo Nation's decision not to turn the water back on, despite all of the really kind of dire consequences that it's creating in the agricultural hub of Shiprock.
I hear you. Callers, we really want to hear from you today. So please do call in now with your questions and comments. The number is 277-5866 here in Albuquerque, 277-5866, or toll free, 877-899-5866. We want to know from you, do you trust the government to clean this thing up? Do you want them to work harder than they are now at finding out who messed it up and who's going to pay for it? What do you think folks in the government have done right, and what have they done wrong? We want to know about it. We want to go back now to you, Professor. If something is going to be listed as a Superfund site, which opens up this giant box of money for long-term projects, whose decision is that?
Well, administratively, it's a decision by the U.S. EPA, but there is a process for Superfund designation. EPA would formally propose designation of an area or a certain set of releases for the Superfund list. And then there's a public comment opportunity, and then EPA would ultimately make a decision whether or not to proceed with that Superfund listing.
So I'm still not totally sure. Who proposes it? Who gets to say, hey, this thing should be on the list?
Well, there is a process in the law for individual private parties. Tribes, for example, can petition the EPA for a Superfund listing. But EPA also has a process that it follows to conduct investigations and, based on the information from those investigations, to propose a designation itself. And I understand in the early 1990s, EPA already went through that assessment process and found that this area would qualify for a Superfund designation. But as you know, I think there's a lot of local opposition to that designation.
Yeah, and we should say that this is an area with historic mining activity, but also very current and present oil and gas development. So this is a very industry-friendly area in many ways. Yes, Durango is full of outdoors people, and yes, there are a lot of folks in Farmington who are into fly fishing, but most of those people make their money on oil and gas. Cliff, the president of the Navajo Nation has said he wants to sue the EPA over that. Can you sue the EPA over this spill?
Well, I don't think you could sue the EPA for a failure to do a Superfund designation. There is a principle of law that anyone in the United States is subject to the rule of law. We are a democracy and not a monarchy. On the other hand, there are principles of law such as sovereign immunity that protect not only the federal government but tribal governments and state governments from lawsuits. And so there are some limitations on the things that you could sue the government for. But if the government, including the EPA at this point, is responsible for the spill, there have been a number of federal government agencies, the U.S. Army, the U.S. Navy, and Department of Energy, among them, who have also been liable for hazardous waste spills. And yes, of course, they're subject to the rule of law and potential cost recovery claims.
I actually have a quick question. With regards to the Superfund site designation, if people oppose the Superfund site designation, how does that prevent it from coming about anyway, given the, you know, the situation with all of the mines along the river?
Well, it's a very good question, Marissa. So let me just say that EPA has the authority to do the Superfund listing, and it's not, you know, subject to a popular vote. So I think that EPA is very sensitive, though, to community concerns. One thing that's an interesting dynamic here is when you ask, well, who is the community? We now know that this community is very, very broad and reaches three states and the Navajo Nation now. So while there may have been, you know, some voices in the Silverton area who are very opposed to Superfund cleanup, when you ask about who is the broader community affected by this mining contamination, you might have a very different sense of whether or not Superfund cleanup should go forward.
Let's hear now from Norman in Albuquerque, who says the industry should pay. Norman, if you've been listening, how do you think this should happen?
Well, I'm not exactly sure how you end up recouping the damages from the industry, but I do agree with your guess that it is the industry more than the taxpayer that should be on the hook for this. And I became concerned when I, hours after the spill, when I heard our environment secretary laying 100% of the blame on the EPA, and I think this is somewhat disingenuous. It moves the marker away from the, in my opinion, the party that's truly responsible, and we have these mines everywhere, and not only in Colorado but in New Mexico. So I would like to see more efforts aimed at getting the industry on the hook for these cleanups, so that it doesn't fall on the taxpayer.
Thank you for that, Norman. And, you know, what he brought up, it is a really long-held and old tension between the Environmental Protection Agency and between folks who work in mining, oil, and gas. And we see those political tensions here in our state, from one administration, Democratic, to the other, Republican, a strong alignment with environmental protection, or a stronger alignment with industry, which does contribute a lot of money to the state economy. And I think the Martinez administration has been much friendlier to the industry in some ways. And I think we're seeing some of these political, footballs being tossed back and forth with, oh, dang this EPA, everybody hates the EPA. And then folks saying, dang this industry, you know, this is their problem. It is not a new issue. We want to now talk to Johnny in Albuquerque. Johnny, what's your question today?
Well, basically, I have a couple comments. First is that because of demand of the population, you know, they demand gold, they demand all the metals for their computers or their wedding rings or their cars or whatever the demand precipitates the production, and the production is not being effectively monitored typically because of the industry is the monitor. So this was outlined in a program I had heard about a week ago on the radio, and you know, it's unfortunate because people want to grow organic foods, but they can't when they're using the irrigation that is contaminated. So.
I hear you, Johnny. Thank you for pointing that out. That is a really good point. Speaking of that water and the contamination, we want to bring in Tommy Roberts, who is the mayor of Farmington. Welcome to the show, Mayor.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
I know that you are really busy up there, so we appreciate your time. The EPA has been doing a lot of testing of the water coming through the river in Farmington, and your own crews have been testing that river water. Do you feel sure that it is safe now to drink, to use on crops, to kayak in?
Well, we can only rely on the science involved in testing the water and the sediment, and the most recent results that have been provided through EPA testing indicate that the water is of an equal quality as before the spill occurred, and that's about a two-week period of time now. But we got the latest results on Monday from the EPA. You know, all of the constituents, heavy metals in the water came back at not even at screening levels, well below screening levels. So that was very good news.
A week ago, there were hundreds of people coming to these community meetings being held up there, yelling, cursing at EPA officials, really angry. You had another meeting earlier this week. How did that meeting go, almost 2 weeks after the spill?
There was a public meeting held every night for, I guess, about a week. And again, the first meeting, 300 people there, very frustrated, very angry, expressed their anger and frustration verbally toward the EPA officials in the audience and on the panel. As the week progressed, the numbers of attendees began to dwindle some, but still pretty high for about 5 days. Monday evening was the last of those public meetings, and there were about 25 members of the public there. So I think that over the course of that week's period of time, people began to receive the answers to questions that they had asked and were feeling a higher comfort level about the quality of the water.
Mayor, let me ask you, you know, we're wondering about the folks on the Navajo Nation who've been having trouble getting access to water. There's been a lot of trucking. Was the city of Farmington also trucking water out to people?
We are providing an opportunity for people to come into the city of Farmington for water for domestic use purposes. But San Juan County government is involved in the process of providing water to farmers and irrigators. And now they are not doing that any longer because the river has been opened up to irrigation as of Monday. Navajo Nation is in a bit of a different situation. The president of the Navajo Nation, Russell Begay, has advised the members of the tribe not to use the water from the river for irrigation or livestock watering purposes, and they're awaiting their own internal testing results. I think there will be a decision by the Navajo Nation with respect to use of the river for irrigation and livestock fairly soon.
You know, can you understand where the president of the Navajo Nation is coming from, or do you think he's exercising an overabundance of caution?
It's hard for me to make that judgment call. It's his responsibility, and he has to feel comfortable with the decision he makes. All I can say is that in all places upriver from the Navajo Nation boundaries, communities are using the river water again for all purposes, whether it be municipal, domestic, agricultural, recreation. We feel comfortable with our decision to tell our residents that the use of the river water is safe. Of course, we've had an uncontaminated source of drinking water preserved all along since day one of this event. And we've had a 5.5 month to 6 month reserve of uncontaminated water. that we feel very comfortable with our decision. It's up to President McGay to make that decision for his people.
Mayor, hold on with us a minute. We want to talk to Carmen in Rio Rancho. She has family on the Navajo Nation. Carmen, what have your family been telling you?
Yeah, there's been a lot of concern up in the Four Corners area, particularly this week with that video that went out of the Attorney General of Navajo Nation, Ethel Brandt, and President Begay showing the water that was being trucked in by a company that had previously used their tanks for fuel and fracking waste. And so it's one thing after another in terms of trying to provide the security and confidence that the water is safe. So this is just another example of federal mistrust. And I don't think it's unreasonable for Navajo Nation to take such a stance, given their history with uranium mining, Peabody Coal Company mining. So there's a history that we have there. So, you know, the water issue and being clean in terms of delivery is pretty significant. And I really think that the state of New Mexico has an incredible opportunity in terms of working with Navajo Nation and actually Four Corners area, all of the counties up there, around infrastructure. So we already knew it on Navajo Nation that families were having to truck water in already prior to this disaster. There are areas within the Navajo Nation where there isn't water available. There's a woman that goes around the community to truck. Auditor Keller released a report that there's $2 billion in unspent funds by the state of New Mexico, much of which is targeted towards infrastructure.
Carmen, that's a really good point. And building up that infrastructure and doing the cleanup, I'm sure there's people who are going to be looking at that state money, looking at federal Superfund money as a possibility, all of that. Right now, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about that. Please call in with your questions and your comments. We do want to hear from you. The number is 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That is 877-899-5866, toll-free. You can email callinshow@kunm.org. Look for us on Facebook, KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM News, and we'll be right back.
Maybe just once in your entire life you have a car or a truck or tractor or RV that you want to get rid of. Maybe it has body damage. Maybe it doesn't run anymore. Maybe it's not worth fixing up and not worth much as a trade, or the driver can't drive it anymore. Anywhere in New Mexico, or even if it's parked in another state, we can pick it up wherever it is. You'll get a KUNM membership and a tax deduction. Just call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
This week on This American Life.
Just to show the guys that he could do whatever he wanted to do, while I was in the when I was in the restroom, he slid newspapers on fire underneath the door.
The story of tyranny writ small, how one man grabbed power and came to be untouchable, terrorizing people, running the custodial and maintenance department of a small school district. That's this week.
Sunday afternoons at 4 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. We are talking about the impact of the Gold King mine waste spill on the folks downstream in Durango, in Farmington, and moving on out to the Navajo Nation. In the studio with me is Clifford Villa, who is a professor of environmental law at the University of New Mexico Law School. He also spent 20 years as a lawyer for the EPA. And we have Marisa DeMarco, a KUNM reporter who's done several stories. Marisa, you reported last week, I think, was it, about water shipments of to the Navajo Nation, and the water was it was contaminated.
Yeah, so that was this week, and what happened was the EPA sent trucks, hired a trucking company to bring water to farmers for their fields, and when they were opening up the barrels, the farmers say that it smelled like petroleum, had an odd sheen to it, and had a really odd color. So they turned the trucks away, and you can imagine, like, as you're watching your fields wither, that's kind of a hard call to make, but they're really concerned about then, you know, killing all of their plants.
I want to go, Marisa, to the mayor. Mayor, do you think that all of this water trucking has stretched the resources of folks in San Juan County and around there to, you know, do they have enough trucks and barrels to get this water around?
Oh, I haven't heard of any real issues in that regard. I know that until just recently, and maybe yesterday or the day before, this water that was being trucked to the reservation was coming from the city of Bloomfield supply. And their supply comes off the San Juan River above the confluence of the San Juan and the Animas. So that water would have been uncontaminated.
So it was good water, but maybe in trucks that had been previously used for something else.
Well, I think that's what you have to surmise, that the trucking company providing the water from the city of Bloomfield is an oil field service company. There may have been some remnants of the contents of those tanks that were mixed with the water. We just don't know, and I've only heard these anecdotal stories about the quality of that water. But I think that what was supposed to happen was that this non-potable water was to be delivered for use for agricultural purposes, for irrigation purposes. So I don't have any direct knowledge, but I'm picking up a lot from just reading our local newspaper.
Mayor, you will probably be putting in some claims for the costs to the city. What has this spill cost Farmington, if not in exact numbers? You know, what have you had to do because of it?
Well, we've expended a tremendous amount of manpower to monitor the event and to assist in our countywide implementation of our emergency operations plan. Many people working overtime hours. I've been very impressed with the way our people have responded. We have provided materials and equipment in addition to various agencies to assist in the supervision of the plan and the implementation of our emergency operations plan. We haven't begun to really sit down to quantify all of the resources that we've infused into this process.
Thank you, Mayor.
But we will be doing that.
We want to go to Travis in Albuquerque, who has a comment about farming. Travis, what does this bring up for you?
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me on the show. I farm in Atrisco in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And, yeah, we just want to say that we're in solidarity. We had a prayer by the river with a bunch of groups from University of New Mexico on Friday, just praying for the families, the communities, the land, basically all of creation that's affected by the spill. And one thing we wanted to say was, I hope this spill, to use a mining metaphor, is the canary in the room that we can learn from and realize that we're not living harmoniously on the earth and that more care has to be taken to take care of Mother Earth, to protect our water, to protect our land. And these crops, you know, that we keep talking about them, you know, in a lot of cultures, the crops are our family. They're our ancestors. They're our life force, our sustenance. And
thank you, Travis. You bring up a really good point. I think Travis was pointing to that, the canary in the coal mine, and the connection being that this plume of yellow water was a signal that all is not well up there in the river. Let's talk to Russell in Albuquerque, who has a question about the continuing leakage. Russell, welcome to the show.
Good morning. The EPA has been monitoring leakage from this mine for years. In 2011, it measured it at 176 gallons per minute, which is why the EPA was up there trying to stop it. 176 gallons per minute is 3 million gallons every 12 days. So this particular spill is only an additional 12 days worth. And, you know, as bad as it is, that's still only 3% of how much leaks out in a year.
Russell, that's a great point. I want to go back to you, Mayor Roberts, up there in Farmington. You know, we were talking earlier in the hour about how folks have been talking for a long time about making this area in Colorado a Superfund site, which would open up a lot of money, but also has some drawbacks. Would you support establishing a Superfund designation for some of these old mines?
I wouldn't be able to make that call without a lot more information and data to research and to analyze. I think that that's a discussion that we will have to have, but I think an argument can be made, just as the gentleman has just made it, that there has been historical leakage from this mine, and without the alarm associated with what we saw with this recent 3 million gallon leakage, the argument probably could be made that designating Superfund monies to clean up these sites might not be the best use of money. I reserve judgment on that. I think we need a lot more information to determine what benefits could be derived from the expenditure of that sum of money.
Let's hear now from Logan in Albuquerque. Logan, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for taking my call. Sorry, I'm actually getting into a law school class. That's funny for Professor Villa.
And
the question was for you anyway, so that works out. I know a big problem with mine spills in the past has been holding the company itself accountable, because they often go in, do their mining, leave and go bankrupt, become insolvent, or somehow get away from that accountability. Has there ever been like a historical precedent to hold the industry as a whole accountable for spills like these?
Logan, thank you for this. Get back into class as soon as you hang up with us. Thank you for the call. Professor, we've touched on this several times during this hour, and I think this points to this pervasive anxiety among people that the people who are causing this are not actually paying for it. Are they paying for it one way or the other?
I think we're all paying for it one way or another, including the mining industry. You know, at one time, the Superfund Trust Fund was established by a tax on oil and chemical industries. Now it's funded by all of us as federal taxpayers. But I think the federal Superfund program has been fairly successful over time at recovering funding when it's available at all. One of the challenges, particularly in the mining industry, is it is inherently cyclical. It goes up and it goes down. And so the challenge today for any new mines is to make sure that there are bonds established so that money is set aside for the cleanup that may happen 10 or 20 years from now.
Politically, the problem here is if you say, hey, we want industry to put money up now for this, we want them to put the money into the Superfund site, that becomes a problem in Congress, and it's like a political, ugh, nobody wants to do that. But if you put the Superfund money that's our tax dollars into it, you clean it up, and then you sue them later, you don't have a political problem.
Well, that's essentially been the model for the last 20 years, where we have funded the Superfund Trust Fund, and EPA has attempted to recover costs and put it back in.
Well, yeah, that's it is functioning in one way or the other. Let's hear from Joaquin in Los Alamos. Joaquin, welcome to the show.
Good morning, everybody. My question is just one part, and it is whether or not or who would be conducting an independent investigation with regards to the short-term and long-term effects of this spill. I'm a trial attorney, and the last person I would expect to provide kind of pessimistic analysis would be the defendant who has already admitted liability.
Thank you for that question, Joaquin. And I'll tell you that I got a press release from the governor last night saying her administration is going to pursue an independent investigation. But Cliff, who else would do this in cases like this?
Well, I think there's going to be multiple investigations. The EPA Inspector General has already initiated investigation. And I know from my experience that the Inspector General investigations are vigorous. But also there's an outside independent investigation that was just announced yesterday by the U.S. Department of Interior, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if there are separate investigations by other state or local agencies.
So everybody's getting in on it. We have a call here from Las Vegas. Francisco, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Just a comment here. You know, it seems to me that the Superfund designation, which has been suggested for, you know, these mines in this area, this is not a new thing as far as designation of a Superfund site. And yeah, it would affect some tourism and some businesses, but really, let's face it, who drives the economy and who drives Congress are large corporations. And the people that are really fighting the Superfund designation are the mining companies themselves, because they want, if you designate a Superfund site, that means it's off limits. No more mining, no more nothing. So the people that are actually fighting this are the mining companies, because they want the opportunity to go back in and mine these old mines when the price is right.
Francisco,
this is like a reserve.
Thank you for that point. Does a Superfund, Professor, does a Superfund designation mean that you can't do any more extraction in that area?
No, no, certainly not. There are a number of Superfund sites that I know of that still have active mining. The Bunker Hill Superfund site is one of them. What it means, though, is that there's going to be a pretty intensive investigation of the existing contamination, and there's going to be a period of cleanup. But for new mines, they will and should operate with the existing set of regulations that any mine would, and usually those regulations are in the first instance, overseen by state agencies.
You know, we've been talking about this cleanup, and I think one of the things that's confusing for me is the testing that the mayor just told us about shows the water is clean, and they've been testing some of the sediment. But I think, Mayor, didn't you tell me that the lingering questions for you are going to be, what about this sediment at the bottom of the river? Is stuff going to sink down there? Are you concerned about that?
I think we have to be concerned about long-term impacts. We know that a lot of these heavy metals have settled out of the water and settled into the riverbed and along the banks. Anecdotally, we're not seeing any visual evidence of contamination in the sediments along the river shoreline, in the upper reaches of the river. We're not seeing that here in Farmington, but we know that as we have storms, heavy storms, and runoff into the river, turbidity will increase, stir up some of those heavy metals that have fallen out and reside in the riverbed. And so we know that we need to have a longer-term monitoring and testing system in place.
Have any of these folks from the EPA talked to you about how they would clean up sediment on the bottom of the river?
Well, no. And I think that the basic plan is to let water flow, river flow, continue to move those sediments and those materials, those heavy metals, downstream. But I don't know of any practical way that you could go in and clean out the sediment and the heavy metals in the sediment. I don't know of any practical dredging process that could be done.
So when we talk about this cleanup, it's mostly at the source of the mine itself, which is really far from you in Farmington.
Well, yeah, and again, I think that we're just going to have to continue to monitor, and we will do that as a part of the continuing implementation of our emergency management plan in San Juan County. We will continue to monitor. We know that the EPA has committed some long-term resources to San Juan County and in the upper reaches of the Animas River in the Durango area, as well as downstream in the Navajo Nation area. So, you know, I'm confident the EPA is going to have that longer-term presence here, and they'll be partners with local agencies and state agencies in continuing to monitor this situation. They have a huge PR problem, and I believe that they are going to ultimately want to do the right thing. Now, I'm a trusting sort, and I know that there's a lot of skepticism among many people about the EPA's actions and what they have promised to continue to do. But I think they have every reason to continue to be involved with locals here in dealing with this issue.
Thank you so much for taking the time out of your really busy schedule to call in with us this morning, Mayor Tommy Roberts of Farmington.
You're welcome.
Professor Cliff Villa, thank you so much for bringing your expertise. We are so lucky that you have decided to come back to Albuquerque and join the UNM Law School. You have been a great help. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Gwyneth, for having me.
And Marisa DeMarco, thank you for letting us borrow you from the Public Health New Mexico project, for which you cover people, policy, and impact. Your project is funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, and we appreciate your expertise here. Thank you.
Thank you, Gwen.
Earlier today, we also talked to Andy Carr from the Four Rivers Rafting Company, and we appreciate his help. And I should also mention we were expecting to hear today from the New Mexico Environment Secretary, Ryan Flynn, but he told us, his representative told us last night he wasn't going to make it. And thank you to all of you who have called in and listened today. We have posted links to this information on our website, so check it out at KUNM.org. If you missed any of this program or you want to share it with people on Facebook or wherever, you can find the audio on our website, as well as all of our previous shows, KUNM.org. You can email us comments about today's show, callinshow@KUNM.org. Find us on Facebook. Just look for KUNM Radio. You can follow our newsroom on Twitter @KUNM News. Thank you so much to Jefferson White, our engineer, Kaveh Movahed screened your calls, and Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Gwyneth Doland.